Oh.
We've had at least a few people listening from New Zealand, apparently, and then someone from Russia and the US.
So. Hey, that's cool.
Yeah, well done, guys. I mean, we're truly an international podcast now.
Yeah, hello to Russia.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to another thrilling episode of Somewhere in Between, the AIT podcast brought to you by the Royal College of GPs. I'm Anthony, I'm the chair of the college's AIT committee, and I'm joined again by our co-hosts, Mira, Hatim, and Johannes. Hi, guys.
Hi,
everyone. Hey.
So for this week's episode of the podcast, we were going to focus on something which has definitely dominated my mind, and I know the minds of lots of other trainees for the last couple of months, which is exams, or more importantly, their cancellation. And as we record this, a joint statement has just come out yesterday, signed by myself as chair of the college's trainee committee, signed by Martin Marshall, who's the chair of the college, signed by the GMC, all of the statutory education bodies, so Health Education England, Health Education and Improvement Wales, NHS Education for Scotland, and the Northern Ireland Medical and Dental Training Agency, plus representatives from the BMA and the BMA GP Trainee Committee as well. And this statement is the culmination of a, I think, a fair to say, interesting few weeks, and it makes a few things clear. So one is that the AKT will be going ahead with social distancing in place, and the plan is for this to run in July. Then also that educational time will be returning for all GP trainees. So we'll be going back to the normal 7-3 split between clinical and educational sessions that full-time trainees would normally have been having. And then finally, and perhaps the biggest announcement, was that we'll be having an alternative temporary form of assessment introduced, which can be run in place of the CSA that we've been all used to before. And as chair of the AIT community, I've been in a privileged position, I guess, for the last few weeks to be kind of a key part of these meetings and negotiations which have helped to reach this point. But there's no doubt that it's been a really challenging time for all trainees, and also for me personally at times as well. And today, I just wanted to share kind of a few reflections from that journey that we've all been on over the last few weeks, and how the decisions announced in the statement were reached. So when I became the AIT chair back in November, in what feels like a totally different world to the one that we live in now, my top priority for the year was trying to create a greater sense of community among GP trainees working across the UK. I hope to bring us together and to bring all of you closer to the college, creating a more open and accessible view of the organisation, which I personally had found so welcoming and nurturing since first becoming a rep now just over 18 months ago. I might be a little biased, but I think we were making good progress on these aims, shifting the way that our reps were recruited and work, bringing in loads of new members, launching new media like this podcast and our bulletin, and planning what would have been some really amazing events if COVID hadn't come in. But then everything did change, and my big aim of community has quickly shifted to COVID, and I spent the last few months just trying to figure out what it means to be an effective rep during a crisis like this. Thriving under COVID conditions is no mean feat, and so it's filled me with pride to see that this is what GP trainees have been doing across the UK, championing new ways of working, supporting patients and colleagues across both primary and secondary care, and generally stepping up to meet this unexpected challenge. Doing this alongside handling the personal load of the pandemic, whether that be dealing with loss, guilt, anxiety, or any other powerful emotions that I know we've all been going through, will have been really tough. But you've been doing this and supporting one another along the way. And for that, I think all of you deserve a huge thank you for everything you've done and everything that I know you're going to continue to do in the weeks and months ahead. But at a time when many of us have been asked to do more, perhaps with less supervision, definitely less educational time, or less support from our friends and colleagues, I know how frustrating it has felt to have extra uncertainty added to everything else that we're currently having to deal with. For me, I was meant to sit my CSA now just a couple of weeks ago in the April diet. But along with hundreds of you, this, of course, didn't happen. and future sittings of the CSA were cancelled now back on March the 18th, with the AKT cancelled shortly afterwards. These cancellations threw around 1,500 of us into a state of limbo, with the all-important milestone of completing training, getting our CCT, and taking those vital next steps in our careers, feeling as though it had been pulled away. The problem of how to resolve the issue of potential CCT delays because of these exam cancellations has not been easy for anybody to answer. This is a decision which involves a huge range of stakeholders: the college, the GMC, health education bodies, NHS England, Scotland, Wales, Northern Ireland, the Department of Health, and of course us as trainees and all of our trainers as well. As soon as the exams were cancelled, talk began about what would happen next. For several weeks, there were discussions where multiple options were brought forward. Conversations range from potential interim CCTs, alternative assessments, and of course the potential of extensions to training for all of those affected. For 5 weeks, these conversations and meetings were all ongoing, with a huge amount of work being done across the board. But despite all of that, in many ways, particularly for trainees, it felt we were no closer to any kind of consensus, and we were running out of time before everyone was meant to be starting to sit their assessments and coming closer and closer to that all-important end of training date. And so as the weeks went by, the sense of frustration became almost palpable, and with good reason. Many of us have jobs lined up, many are desperate to move back to our families or have made plans around other important decisions, even having children. And so this important transition point in our careers is often surrounded by many of life's biggest moments. And so for that to be put at risk will, of course, have been hugely distressing for everyone who's been affected. In the background to all of this, I had been looking for new ways to communicate with trainees, and COVID seemed like a really good opportunity to bring people together. And so initially I thought that a series of WhatsApp groups to help share resources, experiences, and support one another during the pandemic might be useful. I set up the first WhatsApp group on, I think, a Wednesday afternoon, and in less than an hour, it was full. Thanks, WhatsApp, for that 252-person limit, I think. I started another group, then another, and soon we were at four groups, which was already becoming a bit unwieldy. So a trainee called Imran, who was in the first group, shout out to Imran if you're listening to this, recommended that we start a group on Telegram, which was an app that I've not heard before, but it's basically the same as WhatsApp, but with no size limit on your groups. I started this up, and as they say, the rest is history. We now have over 1,000 trainees in, or coming up to 1,000 trainees in that group, which I think is testament to the strength of feeling that everybody has on this issue, and also the feeling that people wanted to connect in a slightly different way. The group has been interesting. It's at times been noisy. Sometimes there's been differences of opinion, which is only natural in a group that size. But it's also been vital to everything that's happened next and helped us to reach the point we're at now. As the frustration began to mount, trainees became increasingly vocal on Telegram and other platforms as well, asking for more information and insight into what was happening and wanting to have their views and concerns feed into the decision-making process. And obviously as chair, I have been in a fortunate position to be at the heart of some of those conversations and to probably have more insight than a lot of trainees had into how the decision-making process was being dealt with. I'd spoken obviously to people at the college and been involved in lots of meetings there. I'd had contact with lots of people at Health Education England who've been great allies to all of this. And so I had had the opportunity to feed in trainee views and work with these people, which I would think was a real benefit from to have that going from the very beginning. And also with all of these people, I've worked and known them for long enough to know that they really do have trainees' best interests at heart and were working tirelessly to try and reach a solution. I continue to feedback this kind of sentiment to trainees and try to keep them up to date on what decisions and conversations were ongoing. But rightly, many of you were asking for more and feeling that you needed a more effective way of having your views put across. What I've realized from all of that is that it's one thing for trainees to be talking to one another, even if it is through an elected rep, but it's very different if that messaging isn't also reflected centrally from the senior stakeholders in any of these big organisations. If it's not coming from all levels, then it doesn't seem to penetrate or reflect the sentiment in the same way. And I think that comms has always been a bit of an issue for any large organization. And I do think that early on, more could have been done to effectively communicate, inform, and engage with trainees on this really important issue. But as this didn't happen, the frustration continued to mount. And soon I was receiving, and still receiving, a lot of messages, but at times I was receiving sometimes nearly 100 personal messages, whether that's on Telegram, email, WhatsApp, texts a day, asking for more information, voicing people's concerns, or just also giving some really brilliant ideas on how this a problem could be effectively solved. Being in this kind of central position at a time of so much turbulence was definitely a new experience for me. And I think that being open and accessible in any type of leadership role is vital and something that everybody should be aiming for. But this can also put a lot of pressure, as I found, on an individual. And sometimes, on some days, I definitely have really, really felt that. Balancing the expectations of my fellow trainees, but also wanting to have good working relationships with colleagues at the college and other organisations. And of course, just wanting to achieve an outcome that was good for general practice and all of our patients. In the end, it was my fellow trainees and other reps who convinced me that a survey would be the right thing to do. We opened our trainee survey, asking questions on how COVID had impacted on people's working patterns, whether they'd been redeployed, and of course, how they felt the exam and CCT issue should be handled. In just 3 days, we had over 1,000 responses from trainees, which I think is really incredible. And thank you again to everybody who took part in that. And the survey opened on a Wednesday afternoon. And then over that next weekend, I wrote a report summarizing all the views that had been expressed so far. As I read through that data, I quickly came to realize that there was just such a massive strength of feeling on this issue. Sometimes in any kind of forum, it's easy to presume that the most vocal people don't necessarily represent the majority and that lots of more nuanced views could easily be missed. It's true that there were lots of different points of view put across in the survey, but a few things became clear, and many of you will have had a chance to read through the survey and the survey report in more detail. But I think primarily the biggest kind of thing that we could draw from it was that about 80% of trainees were opposed to training extensions, and they were concerned about the impact this would have on the GP workforce and potential issues to delivering patient care. They were concerned about morale and well-being. And they were concerned that the CSA, in its current format, could never be delivered under COVID rules, and so felt there was no appropriate exit strategy being put forward for how they could ever be enabled to sit this exam in future sittings as well. Even as I was writing the survey report, I wasn't necessarily sure what the next steps would be and what we would do with that. I discussed it with other reps and trusted colleagues and friends, asking for a bit of advice. And I guess I was concerned about a few things. I was concerned about the time we had available and that a decision might be rushed through without having considered the data and the views of trainees, that in some way, and also that in some ways, it felt as if we'd reached a bit of an impasse on a solution that would be palatable to trainees. I ended up sending the survey to all seniors in all of the stakeholder organisations that we've already mentioned, as well as the Department of Health and Social Care and the Health Select Committee, hoping that by escalating these views and these concerns to this kind of level, that it would help to bring people together from across organisations and really push this forward as quickly as possible. I think it's safe to say that the survey had the desired effect, but on reflection, I think my personal learning is that I probably could have handled this a little bit more sensitively as well. My colleagues at the RCGP, at Health Education England, and other people who I trust and respect should have had the right to see this first, and also did deserve recognition for the efforts they had been doing to involve trainee representatives in the discussions that had been going on so far. A decision to release a report like this in the way that it was done can have long-lasting impacts on trust and relationships. But I do think that my decision to throw this particular grenade was born out of wanting to do the best for trainees, which has always been my number one priority as an elected rep. I know that everyone working in other organisations also truly values trainees and their futures, but I do think that the extra push the survey report provided has helped to really progress this issue. Within a week of the survey being released, we had a roundtable bringing together all of the stakeholders from all four nations for the first time since this issue had arisen. And now, just a couple of weeks later, we're here with a new assessment under development and the ability for trainees to progress back on the table. The actual hard work, of course, is all ongoing, and that is something that I definitely cannot take any credit for. That is all down to the skilled, dedicated, and passionate staff at the College, Health Education England, the GMC, and others who are all working day and night to really deliver this for trainees. I obviously have most contact with those working at the college, and I know that they definitely have not stopped working weekends, evenings, and the upcoming bank holidays to help us help patients and help general practice. Their work is really incredible, and I've been amazed at the speed that they've been able to move to help us. And I think that deserves a massive thank you from all of us as trainees. Of course, I definitely also do need to thank trainees, my fellow reps for providing support, counsel and advice, and of course, every other trainee. Without your views, insights and ideas, we would definitely not have been able to take this forward. I think this experience has shown me what can really be achieved when people come together and unite, when we collaborate and when we trust one another. And so actually, if I go back to thinking about my main aims for the year, which was all around creating that sense of community and bringing people together, I think we've really been able to actually continue that. The question is now, of course, what else can we do together to champion general practice, make further improvements, and build that amazing team that we're all a part of? And so that's what I'm going to be focusing on for my remaining 6 months as chair. And I hope that all of you listening can help support some of that too.
I mean, if there was a clapping sound available on Zoom, I think Hatem Yohannes and I would all press that. And I think it goes without saying, I'm sure the boys will agree with me, that we are all very thankful to Anthony and the role that he's played. He's not paid me to say that in any way at all, but has been instrumental in sort of creating this sense of community amongst trainees, making our voices heard through what has been a turbulent and difficult yet, you know, somewhat successful time for us. So I think it's safe to say that we are all really proud of him as well.
Absolutely. Let's all give him a round of applause anyway, I think.
We can clap into the microphone.
Thanks, guys. I really do appreciate it. I think it's, you know, it's been a massive team effort to get to this point, and I think it's just testament to everybody that we've been able to make a really positive change for trainees, and one that will help people take those really important next steps in their careers come August and for the months afterwards as well.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think one of the things I have to say that's really impressed me over the, you know, the crisis is just how people have come together. So as Anthony mentioned earlier, there was a complete change in the way that representatives sort of put themselves forward over the last 6 months or so. We had a national meeting well before the pandemic started, but since then we have regularly all been staying in touch, trying to represent the views of people around the country, recognizing that GP trainees have had different experiences based on where they are, whether it be with redeployment or shielding, etc., and trying to really take on those views. And as one of the reps myself, being part of those meetings shows how much we all really do care about each other. And it hasn't just been ST3s, you know, ST1s, ST2s, everyone has sort of been part of that decision making process and you know, championing the survey and trying to get it out there. And I think it's been a really, well, I wouldn't say pleasurable thing to be a part of, but has been a really motivating thing to be a part of, to know that we've got a workforce of really enthusiastic people who do care about what they do and the patients that they're going to be taking care of in the future.
Yeah, I think it's also understanding that actually one of the things, actually being a rep through this process and seeing it develop, and actually speaking to my colleagues who are also ST3s or ST2s and worried about doing their exams, is there's just so much complexity in this process. And there's a lot of stakeholders, a lot of people that have a role in actually forming our education, forming our pathway, forming our assessments, and determining what we have to do to be good GPs when we do finish our training. And understanding that wider system as a whole can really help to sort of give you the patience, because this is a really unprecedented time. We're hopefully unlikely to see a pandemic like this again in our lifetime. If you speak to many of your colleagues, your trainers, your TPDs, they probably would have never, you know, experienced the pandemic of this you know, of this severity working as a GP in the past. So I mean, we have to also react to that and appreciate that, and appreciate that things do take time to actually happen.
Yeah, I think that's kind of the big thing that I realized early on was that a lot of trainees were incredibly frustrated with the college, and it often seems that anything negative that happens in training does come back to the college because they're in some ways the most visible organization. They potentially are the one that trainees might interact with the most. And so it's easy for them to be. And I also think they do quite a good job of being open, particularly now things like the membership forum. I think those just make it much more of an easy target. And I don't think that in this particular situation, anyone really made a mistake. It's just, as you say, this is a really unprecedented situation. No one was expecting to deal with this, or has really had to prepare or handle a similar situation before. But I think for all trainees who've been involved in taking part in the survey, who've been involved in lots of these discussions, I think it has been really useful for them to see a bit more about how the system works, about how any decision around training involves lots of different organizations who all have slightly different responsibilities, but are just kind of deliver slightly different elements of our training or our assessments throughout the 3+ years of training. So I think hopefully that's been useful for people just thinking also about how they can influence change, and in the future how they might be able to target different individuals if there's something that they would like to see improve or alter in some way as part of their training or their future career.
Yeah. Yeah, that's also one of the biggest things, actually, the role that trainees as a whole can actually play to actually make an impact on the decisions that are made. And I think doing the survey, the WhatsApp group, the Telegram groups, the discussion that we've had as reps in our meetings have actually been really helpful in showing the impact that we can have. And if there is something that we feel isn't probably moving fast enough, or we need to make sure we have a voice in, we can do that, and through the appropriate channels, and that's really positive, I think.
Yeah, you don't always need to send it to the Health Select Committee or the Secretary of State, though. That's something I've learned. You don't necessarily always need to do that.
I suppose moving forward, one of the things you wanted to discuss in this episode was maybe some of the questions that some trainees may have on their mind with this information that sort of come out this week. But obviously we have the caveat that some of it is still unknown. As Anthony said, lots of people are working really hard to get the exact specific details out there. And as soon as we all know a bit more, then I'm sure people, reps, will be informing trainees, and trainees will be hearing it from the college as well. A question would be, what is this new assessment that's been brought out, and how will it differ from the CSA, I guess?
Yeah, so yeah, something I failed to say in all of that diatribe was actually what the new assessment is. So so it's going to be called the Recorded Consultation Assessment. So the RCA as opposed to the CSA, and it will involve trainees and patients, so real life patients, recording their consultations with them. And this will be, it can be anything from a face-to-face consultation being recorded as a video, to recording your video consultations with your patients, or telephone calls as well. So it can be either an audio or video assessment that you'll be submitting. The exact details, things like how many, what kind of coverage of your curriculum you'll need, and the exact dates on when you'll submit them are all still being worked on at the minute, but hopefully we'll have much more information that we can share with trainees on that soon to allow them and their trainers time to prepare those videos and get them and audio recordings in for assessment in time for their expected CCT dates.
Yeah, and I think one of the other things that we wanted to mention was that there's always been a lot of questions about ST3s who may be out of sync or are due to CCT, but maybe not necessarily in August.
Yeah, so obviously the primary goal at the minute is to make sure that everybody who's due to CCT in August can get through on time. But obviously I'm an out of sync trainee. I'm due to finish in the end of October, so I can totally appreciate the concerns and uncertainty that everybody in a similar position to myself will be feeling. Obviously, the new assessment is one that is meant to be a temporary solution to the COVID crisis, but it would be able to be continued to use for future cohorts and future months of training if the current restrictions remain in place. And if we were going to revert back to something like the CSA or any other kind of modified assessment, then trainees would be given adequate notice so that they have time to prepare for whatever the assessment is. I guess, though, that the important thing to think of is that this isn't really a new form of assessment. It's assessing exactly the same capabilities and skills as the CSA. It's just being recorded and submitted in a slightly different way.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, of course, we've done a lot of focus on the CSA or the replacement CSA, but what about the AKT? Because that's also another exam that is essential for some SD3s that need to be finishing, but also some SC2s that had prepared and booked their exams and were looking to sit it towards the end of their SC2 rotation.
Yeah, so obviously the AKT is going to hopefully be able to restart in July, and the college has already been talking to Pearson View centres about making sure they have all of the right social distancing requirements in place to keep everybody safe doing that. So that hopefully should be able to go ahead without any issues. It will still be, there's obviously an issue of capacity with all of this, and there's a certain number of GP trainees who are due to CCT who will be given first priority, I imagine. That's the exact kind of way that things will be prioritised, is still being worked through and will be a joint responsibility between deaneries and trainers and trainees as well to be able to organise that. But I think it probably will mean that some trainees who are, for example, are in ST2 and would like to sit it might have to wait to a future sitting, but they probably will be putting on additional extra sittings of the exam so that people can be caught up and got to where they need to be.
And Anthony, some of us heard this week about some changes or going back to the previous bit with educational time. Have you got any more information on that?
Just a few hours ago, I think a letter came out from Health Education England, which is signed by Simon Gregory, who's the one of the medical directors at Health Education England. And he has basically outlined that training time will be returning for GP trainees. So going back to the normal 7-3 session split that we're used to traditionally. So it means 7 clinical sessions and 3 educational sessions. So obviously, I mean, lots of trainees haven't necessarily seen too much change to their educational time. A lot of people have continued to get the same tutorials and self-directed learning time. A lot of people have obviously seen their half-day release cancelled. Mine has just restarted this week virtually for the time being, but I know that lots of other people are in a similar position of either not having it or things just about to start get up and running again. So yeah, that will all be taking off over the next few weeks. Obviously different areas will have a slightly different timeline for getting things back up and running depending on what the local capacity and demand on their educators is, but hopefully within the next few weeks most people should be getting all of that protected time back.
And I suppose another question that may be on the minds of some of the ST3s who are hoping to sit exams just like yourself with regards to study leave, whether or not there would be more allocated for that or that if that had been considered going forward.
Yeah, so I think all of the resource will be made available to allow trainees to prepare effectively for any kind of assessment. So that does mean that study leave will have to be part of that. I haven't got any information on the specifics of that, but it's obviously something we have been championing and putting forward as an important part of any trainees' assessment preparation process.
Yeah.
Perfect. And then obviously, finally, from my point of view, I guess the other key aspect of progressing through training is something that has actually had a lot of work put in place already. So just to maybe summarize or identify that's already been done, is the stuff on workplace-based assessments and e-portfolio and where we are with that.
So obviously it was great that the college released workplace-based assessment guidance really early on. So that they released kind of two sets, one for trainees who are due to finish and have their exams, which gives out some specific requirements, and then another set of guidance for ST1s, 2s and 3s who aren't meant to finish in August. So that's been really good. That's continuing to be reviewed depending on what the future looks like. So that is regularly being discussed and seeing if any further adjustments need to be made to it. I imagine as we return more to the new normal and things start to settle slightly, there might be some changes again to the workplace-based assessment requirements. But again, if that was being considered, that will be communicated to trainees with ample time so that they can fulfill any requirements that they need to. None of this will ever be just sprung on trainees.
Yeah, and I suppose for me, it's a, I know trainees have been so patient up until this point to hear any news and see what's going on. And obviously going forward, there is just going to be more information regarding, you know, both when the AKT will happen, dates and various other things, and also to do with the new sort of CSA format as well. And I suppose it's about continuing our patience a little bit more, because we know these changes are being worked upon. And naturally, there will be lots of questions that AMP can't answer and people can't answer just generally just yet. But to be bear in mind that you still vocalise your thoughts, and we're still sort of using the Telegram app. You're still speaking to your reps about what's going on. And if you wanted to ask questions, to ask through the podcast as well, just so that we're bearing in mind about our trainee voices, which I think has been sort of the key central theme to all of this all along.
Yeah.
Yeah. The key thing I've also noticed is the comms is actually massively upscaled recently. And actually that's something that really needed to happen. So that's probably one of the biggest pieces of progress that I think we've achieved. And just keep an eye on your emails, because it looks like information is coming out from the college, from Health Education England, quite regularly. And that seems to be the place to get the most official information. And we will keep you updated throughout our podcast, wherever we can, and through our WhatsApp groups and connections whenever we can as well.
I mean, and any final thoughts or anything you want to say for in terms of the exams and things like that?
I think the main thing is really just to say thank you to trainees for your patience, for feeding in so many amazing views to this whole process, and putting pressure at a time when it was really needed to progress things. And also, again, just a really big thank you to anyone who might be listening who works at any of the organisations we've mentioned. The reality is that none of this progress could be made without the people working in them. They all have trainees' best interests at heart. They've all listened to our concerns and have acted upon them appropriately. And we've now got to a position where we have a really good potential solution on the table, which will help trainees. So massive thank you to trainees, a massive thank you to everybody else. And like Hatem says, I think there's a lot that can be learned from this. We've seen that comms definitely has improved, and hopefully all of that will continue, and we'll be able to continue to have a much more two-way conversation between trainees and everybody else who's responsible for their training in the future as well.
And I suppose trying to vaguely moving away from the exam topic at hand, just as a general check-in with everybody, because I guess this is my one time of the week where I get to check in with all three of you as well. And how has everybody's week been? People looking forward to Boris Johnson's announcement on Sunday about what may be happening with lockdown?
Yes.
Anyone want to say
that was yeah. That was the intensity of the excitement right there.
what are your predictions? Do you think things are going to change dramatically?
Well, I mean, if it was up to anybody who lives near where I live, I think it seems like lockdown doesn't exist anymore. There's so yeah. many travels and people yeah. outside. I don't know whether it's the same for everybody else. Johannes, how is it around you?
Yeah, so cycling into work every day, I've started hitting quite a few traffic jams now, which I can't explain. But yeah, it's exactly the same. People are kind of out and about in the streets. You know, there are, I saw two old boys sitting on a park bench at the top of the hill having a chat, which didn't look like it was necessary. but yeah, I think the world has just reached its limit, hasn't it? And it's starting to relax.
Yeah, definitely. How's ED at the minute? Are you seeing it becoming a bit quieter, or changes in who you're seeing?
Yeah, actually, really interesting in ED at the moment. So we're literally just this morning, they completely changed the whole arrangement of the department. So initially, we had about 15 COVID beds in the hot zone. And what they've done is they've now deep cleaned that and opened that up to normal patients. And they've changed our normal resus department, which has only 4 beds, into the COVID zone. So that's really actually anticipating a reduced number of COVID cases that we're seeing. It's been very, you know, on a lot of the nights that I've been working, so I've been on nights this week, we haven't had any patients overnight that have come into the COVID zone, and all the patients have mainly been in the non-COVID zones, the cold zones. So I think it's reflecting in terms of the patient flow that we're seeing, and we're hoping that this new changes to the system will improve just the general flow of the department and hopefully improve the care that we're giving overall.
Yeah, I think that's probably quite reflective, at least for me, of what I'm experiencing in primary care. I don't know about Ant and Johannes, but I'm definitely getting more calls. The shift of work has definitely sort of swung to the busier side, dealing with slightly more chronic conditions and other things that aren't as COVID related. which has been interesting. And also lots of people who I think with the thought that lockdown measures may be eased feel a little bit more comfortable contacting us. I don't know about you, Ant, have you experienced that as well?
Yeah, definitely. I think the last week particularly, things seem to be moving back to not normality. It's still a lot quieter than normal, but people are coming in with the usual GP problems, not coming to the phone with the usual GP problems, which I think is good to see. And definitely I have not become saturated with COVID related calls, but it's nice to be able to add a bit more variety into what you're talking about on the phone. And I think, as I said last week, I now have started to feel a lot more confident and comfortable doing a lot more telephone consultations and video consultations. It actually feels very natural now, and whilst it's never going to be the same as those face-to-face conversations, it is nice to be able to have more kind of in-depth chats with people around the kind of more chronic disease management and things that I really enjoy.
Yeah, definitely. And anyone listening wouldn't have seen that, but Johannes briefly dropped out for a few seconds there, and all of us just looked very confused at each other. But Johannes, how's your week in primary care been?
It's great. So I'm still kind of seeing most of the face-to-face patients. We're starting to get some of the less acute, maybe less serious patient presentations coming back in. So I had someone come in today with cold feet.
not about to get married or anything, though.
Yeah, that's it, yeah.
No. It turned out just to be cold feet rather than anything more serious. It just seems like business as usual, to be honest.
Yeah, I think we're definitely all feeling that. And we were all saying, obviously, the podcast is focused on coronavirus and the pandemic over the past few weeks because of sort of what's been happening around us. But we are hoping to sort of, in upcoming episodes, talk about a different variety of things that we would all like to talk about and hear about.
Yeah. And obviously, next week's episode is hopefully going to be all next week or whenever it's released. Episode will be all about digital health. And actually, in our practice this week, we've just launched eConsult, which I haven't actually started using yet, but looks like it could be interesting. Haven't decided whether I think it will be 100% good or somewhere in the middle, but we'll see. I think it definitely will be really useful for a large number of our patients to be able to interact in a slightly different way.
Yeah, I mean, our practice has decided to go with footfall, which is effectively the same type of thing. So it will be interesting to hear our varying experiences that patients are having or how we're sort of dealing with those interfaces as well.
I guess we're used to working in a system. I guess we're already working in a system where we're using, system one in some practices and EMIS in the other. So we might as well get used to practices and using those different programs for their video and e-consults as well.
Yeah, we can maybe have a top trumps of electronic consultation tools.
Yeah, from varying language lines as well that go along with it.
I think Accurix is going to be at the top of everybody's top trumps for a while, but it'll be interesting to see how any of these things work. I'm not sure if the e-consult will be able to be used by that many of our patients, as we do have a lot of people who don't speak English or probably wouldn't think to use their phone in that kind of way. So it'll be interesting to see how it works for our population.
Was it me or did anyone else hear intense beeping?
That was my doorbell. My husband, I can hear my husband downstairs getting it. It's yet another Amazon delivery, probably like the 10th of the day, seeing as he can't stop ordering just random stuff for the house.
No, absolutely. I just keep getting alerts on our joint account where going, order from Amazon. I never know what's coming.
Sounded like the timer was going off.
It's just a very loud, irritating, shrill sound. I think today we've had drill bits, we've had some new water bottles because he's started jogging again, so one for him to take on that, and I'll be interested to see what this one is as well. Yeah, the drill bits is because I think I mentioned this before, but we basically turned our spare room into like a home gym, and now I need to try and drill a TV bracket onto the wall, so we can put up a TV in that room to watch like exercise, to have like exercise classes running on. So I've never used a power drill in my entire life, so that is my bank holiday activity.
I mean, definitely find out where various pipes and important sort of electric behind that wall, maybe.
Yeah, I'm worried, but hopefully it'll go fine.
But yes, we are hoping that our next episode, whenever that will come out to you, will be about digital health tech. And we're hoping to speak to a few people who are already established using various sort of forms of technology, but also hopefully some trainees who are, have delved their, into that field and have a specific interest with that as well.
Yes, if you're someone that has any interest or actually wants us to share maybe something that you're doing with us, some interesting piece of work or project, especially a digital transformation project in general practice, would be great to hear about. And just contact us via email or Twitter and just send in what you're doing, because we really want to hear about those incredible pieces of work that are going or already happening, especially by trainees.
So thanks for listening, and we will see you all again for the next episode of Somewhere in Between. Yeah, also, I was just thinking when you were talking about a round of applause earlier, I found something which I really want to use in future episodes of the podcast, which is like a soundboard. Here's a few. That's a much nicer sounding doorbell.